From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you, everybody. It is midsummer, and everybody's out at the beach or in the backyard or grilling, and what better thing to have in your radio than music? Okay, here's something better. Interviews with musicians. It's witty banter you can dance to.
Today, we bring you some of our favorite Not My Job games with musicians. We begin with singer-songwriter Nico Case. She joined us in July 2009, along with panelists Adam Felber, Paula Poundstone, and Julia Sweeney.
I began by asking Nico to describe her own style of music.
I don't really know what to call it. I'm a very loud singer. Loud.
You're loud. You're a loud singer.
Modern, independent, loud singing.
Well, actually, let's play a little bit of your music, because I also am interested in the difference between your speaking voice and your singing voice. So here's a song. It's called Letter from an Occupant, which you did with the band The New Pornographers. So that's you singing. It doesn't sound like you talking. You're sort of like a modern-day Jim Neighbors in that regard.
The thing that's weird about that, and they didn't tell me this till years later, is they actually changed the pitch of that song. So I don't actually sing like that either.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's higher than I actually sing.
So you're kind of a modern-day Chipmunks.
Exactly. Every time I hear it, I was like, are you sure that was me who did that? And apparently it was.
Wow, who knew? Well, tell us about the life of an indie rock superstar. We imagine it's all just sort of glamour and groupies and debauchery.
Well, I think that's for men in rock, but
really?
If you're a woman in rock, you find that basically people don't talk to you unless they're eBay guys who want you to sign stuff that they can sell on eBay later and they don't actually know who you are.
That's it?
Glamorous rock and roll groupies hanging around and feeding you grapes and stuff, that doesn't really happen.
You mean you don't have skinny male hipsters throwing their ironic T-shirts at you?
Oh, my God, no.
Really?
It's only...
Do you wish you did?
The one time I ever saw a guy waiting to talk to me in line after the show, it turned out to be my cousin. But
oh, come on.
I'm not even kidding. I saw him, and I was like, there is a tall, handsome guy waiting to talk to me. And he got up to me, and sure enough, he wanted to talk to me, and he said, hi, I'm your cousin. And I was like, of course you are.
That's crazy.
Did he get a signature for something to sell on eBay as well while he was there?
No.
All right, you have lived, as far as we know, in Virginia, Washington State, Vancouver, Chicago, and Arizona, right? And you're a relatively young woman, and now you're moving to Vermont.
I'm kind of like a hobo.
What is chasing you, Nico Case?
I lived in Vermont when I was little, and I always wanted to go back because everyone's so kind. And they don't age. It's really weird.
They don't age?
But I like that. They don't age.
But don't,
well,
traditionally...
Well, I saw my friend's mom for the first time in 15 years a few months ago, and she was even wearing the exact same shirt that she'd been wearing the last time I saw her, which I was in, like, sixth grade.
My experience reading and watching a lot of science fiction growing up, instead of starting my own band like you did, is that communities where people don't age usually have a terrible dark secret. Like some sort of
alien... It could be
alien...
a pet cemetery situation.
Yeah,
I don't
for
know,
example.
But I'm going to find out.
There you're going to go. And we understand that in Vermont, you have a barn filled with pianos.
I do.
Why do you have a barn filled with pianos?
Well, I went on Craigslist to find a piano for the farmhouse, and there were so many free pianos that I thought it would be really hilarious to see how many free pianos you can get, because there was nobody wants their pianos, right? And then, you know, I also learned that free pianos aren't free, because you have to move them and then you have to tune them. They're like having an entire team of draft horses or something. They're very high maintenance.
Wow.
In the end. And also getting a piano on Craigslist does not guarantee that it is tunable. I have 8 and there are 6 that were tunable.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah. So what do you do with 6 tuned pianos?
Well, what we did is we made a remote recording unit, and we had lots of people come out, some folks from the New Pornographers and myself, and Paul Rigby from my band, and Garth Hudson from the band.
Wow.
And we did some recording, and there's birds and frogs and all kinds of stuff that you can't get rid of on there, too, so that was pretty fun.
I think also a good question is, what do you do with two pianos that can't be tuned? Just not,
well,
the recordings aren't as good.
Literally put them out to pasture and let Jesus do them. Just see what it looks like. It'll be like Black Beauty at the end of Black Beauty.
It'll
and
be
I
great.
Have the remainder of my days on the soft grasses, you know.
Well, Nico Case, we are so pleased and honored to have you. Nico, we've invited you here to play a game we're calling...
They taste like a magic combination of sugar, happiness, and chalk.
So obviously your parents were either fans of the drug-addicted singer Nico, the Velvet Underground, or, and we prefer this option, they just loved Necco wafers. Those are the yummy, hard little discs made by the New England Confectionery Company. So we are going to ask you, in fact, about Necco.
Bring it.
All right. We put these together, three questions together. We got help from Steve Almond. He's the author of a book called Candy Freak. Get two questions right, you win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice on their home answering machine. Ready to do this?
I'm ready.
All right. Carl, who is Nico Case playing for?
Peter, she is playing for Kate Bowman Johnson of Philadelphia.
Ready to play?
Yeah.
She's already ready.
Kate,
she's,
I'm going to do my best for you.
All right. I like this focus here. The history of the candy, Necco wafers, goes back a long way. In fact, the wafers could be found where? A, floating on the water by the thousands after the sinking of the Titanic. B, in the rucksacks of Union soldiers during the Civil War. They just loved them. Or C, at Ellis Island in the 1890s, where they were the first, quote, American food many immigrants ever tried.
I'm going to go with C.
You're going to go with C, Ellis Island. The immigrants arriving there, being handed these dusty little wafers, going, oh, my God, the food here is small and dry and crunchy and tasteless. That's your choice?
That's my choice, yes.
Yeah, I'm afraid it was B. It was the Union soldiers.
No.
The candy was first made in 1847. And
Come
Union
on, they
soldiers.
Always talk about hardtack. They never talk about Necco wafers. Ken Burns hasn't put that in the documentary.
Oh, yeah.
I know every single thing about every battle, but I don't know that they ate Necco wafers. I can picture their severed limbs on the battlefield, but they never said anything about Necco wafers.
No, didn't you hear it?
Lincoln mentions it in the Gettysburg Address.
Lincoln was too depressed to bring up the whole Necco wafer thing.
No, Necco wafers were first made in 1847, and Union soldiers carried them. They enjoyed them in extreme situations that could be thrown with great effect at the enemy.
You don't remember that from the Ken Burns documentary?
Well, it was in black and white. I couldn't tell if the discs were colorful or not. So.
Oh, no, it was like Garrison.
My dearest Annabelle, thank you for the letter and for those delicious round wafers.
It would brighten my soul greatly should you
send me some Necco wafers.
Set aside some Necco wafers for me at my funeral.
Today,
miraculously, I had a Necco wafer in my breast pocket. And it turned aside the
Elijah Hunt Rose.
Here we go. Question number two. One of the enduring questions, maybe since those first days of the Necco wafer, maybe this is what they talked about, waiting for battle in the Civil War. What exactly are the purple ones supposed to taste like? Is it A, beet, B, clove, or C, steak?
I'm going to go with B, clove.
And you're right. They are clove-flavored candy.
Necco wafers under his saddle, and he wasn't in battle, which he never was.
He actually refused to commit his troops to the 7 days battle because he didn't have enough Necco wafers. Did you know that?
No, he didn't. They're not moving anywhere until the Necco wafers come. We must build a pontoon bridge to bring the Necco wafers.
General Lee's plans for the Battle of Antietam were found on a Necco wafers wrapper. All right.
Curse their Yankee candy.
They're as flinty and indestructible as the candies they carry.
All right, here's your last question. Get this right, you win it all. Necco wafers today.
Okay.
They're odd tasting. They have one use in which they outshine any other confection. What is it? A, practice communion wafers for kids. B, leveling wobbly tables. Or C, replacement ammunition for the popular Rayline brand toy disc shooting guns?
I'm going to go with A.
You're going to go with A, the communion wafers?
Yeah, but
yes.
I mean, I never had one of those guns. I don't know.
Go with A. You're right. It's A. Congratulations. Now, they're good for nickel wafers because of their shape, size, and lack of flavor are good for both practicing First Communion and for having your own ceremonies at home, if you're so inclined.
They build your relationship with the Lord like no other can do.
They really will.
They really
in. Carl, how did Nico Case do in our quiz?
Nico did very well, Peter. Two correct answers, so she wins for Kate Bowman-Johnson. Congratulations,
oh,
Nico.
Oh, boy.
We did it, Kate.
You did it. Congratulations.
We did it.
I love it. Nico Case is one of my favorite musicians. Nico, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for hosting me.
Bye, Nico.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Good luck, Kate.
Thank you so much. It's a clip show you can hum, the best of our recent interviews with musicians. Felipe Rose and David Hodo are arguably two of the most successful, most recognizable musicians of the last three decades.
Although you probably wouldn't recognize them without their costumes as the Native American and construction worker, respectively, the two founding members of the Village People joined us in April 2010 with panelists Luke Burbank, Kerry O'Connor, and Adam Feldman.
I asked Felipe, who was actually part Lakota, how he was discovered.
I was dancing in clubs in New York City in my native gear, and then a French producer was like looking for the next big thing, and he approached me in the club and said, you know, I want to do something with you. And I said, get lost, buddy. and then, you know, he kept popping up, and then finally he said, no, seriously, you know, I want to put a group together. And everyone that auditioned is pretty much by the stereotype.
Right.
And how did you know that your band was taking off? Was there a moment where you looked at each other and said, oh, my God, this is going to be huge?
From the very first performance we had at a club in Brooklyn called 2001 Disco Odyssey, where they filmed Saturday Night Fever, it was all Italian, and
back
they
then.
All had the Farrah Fawcett hair and the John Travolta pompadour, and they'd heard our music, but they'd never seen us. The lights came up, and it was like the parting of the Red Sea.
Hey, what is going on here?
We ended up having an outstanding reception from them, and the next time we came to Brooklyn, they had to turn away hundreds of people. They couldn't even get in the club.
Tell me about your biggest hit. You were a number, but clearly the biggest one is YMCA. And did you guys come up with the iconic, you know, Make the Letters Dance? Was that you guys?
No, that was the dancers on American Bandstand.
Mm-hmm.
We had just sung the song, and Dick Clark said, the dancers have something they want to show you. And so the dancers showed us these steps, and we thought, well, that's pretty stupid.
Let's do it.
We've made a 30-year career out of it.
Yeah. Who does the C? Because I have a question. Do you ever worry about, like, you're doing the dance or singing? You're afraid of doing the C facing the wrong way?
Well, David spells it out to the audience.
Yeah, we have a lesson where we teach the audience.
You teach the audience.
How to do it correctly. And they do it the same direction we do it.
Okay.
So we have to turn around.
Oh, it's like a mirror image.
Yeah. The other way.
This is why we didn't record the Hokey Pokey.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like they're doing YMDA. What's that? We don't know what that is. Tell me if it's true. I hope it's true that you've played bar mitzvahs.
Oh, bar mitzvahs, bat mitzvahs, you name them.
Man,
you've
they pay good,
bar
let
mitzvahs.
Me tell you.
I feel so bad about mine because you weren't there. But do you customize your act for your bar mitzvah?
You know,
do you do like
funny.
Hebrew letters when you're spelling it? do you do the four letters of the Shema? What do you do?
We rupture something.
With bar mitzvahs, it's the parents that are hiring us for themselves because the little kids sit and look at us like, what?
We did a bar mitzvah where the dad rented out the Intrepid.
You're kidding me.
City.
Somebody had a bar mitzvah for their kid on an aircraft carrier with the Village People.
And they had West Point cadets. They had West Point cadets. I mean, this guy went all out.
Yeah.
That kid is definitely going to be gay.
But we've had...
And I'm assuming you did in the Navy, right?
On the ship, of course.
Oh, yeah, well,
absolutely.
It'd be great.
Well, you know, we've done bar mitzvahs like with Barry White and Jessica Simpson at Pierre.
No, some kid got you and Jessica Simpson at his bar mitzvah.
And Barry White, yeah.
And Barry White.
Tell me about it.
I am
jealous.
That is, I have to call my parents now.
Tell them that you want the Village People to do your bar mitzvah all over.
I'll mention you right after Jessica Simpson, if you don't mind. But I'll bring you up. One last question. I do not begrudge you an instant of your success and happiness, but doing the same act in those costumes for 33 years, do you ever think to yourself, man, I'd like to do something else. Yeah, I'd like to play ballads. Yeah, I'd like to do something.
No.
Just for variety.
We change the act a bit. We change it around.
Oh, I'd like to play golf.
Funny, not a single one of them was the golfer.
Felipe and David, we are delighted to have you with us, and we have asked you here to play a game we're calling
Really, Really Not Your Job.
So, you two were the construction worker in the Indian, right? So we're going to ask you about the ones that weren't your jobs, the other three guys, or three of the other guys in the Village People. Answer two out of three questions about the other fake jobs in the band, and you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice on their home answering machine or voicemail. Carl, who are Felipe and David from the Village People playing for?
Deborah Heiligman of New York, New York.
All right. First up. Ready to play, guys?
Yep.
You are allowed to consult. You are allowed to answer in unison. You are allowed to act out the letters as you answer, whatever you like. First up, of course, cowboy. Cowboy. Real cowboys back in the olden days in the open range still needed some entertainment out there. Which of these was a real cowboy pastime in the Old West? A, having weeks-long flea-catching contests, keeping their prey in special jars. B, holding elaborate, quote, stag dances, at which the cowboy and or his friends dressed up as dancing girls. Or C, cow pat bingo.
I guess cow pat bingo.
You're going to go for cow pat bingo?
I grew up on a farm, and we used to throw cow patties at each other like frisbees.
Sure, so why not?
I can see making a game out of it.
Well, there is a game called cow pat bingo, but it's a recent invention. The cowboys used to have stag parties because cowboys were seen as so disreputable and filthy that no real woman would associate with them. So some of them would dress up as women and dance for the
So that's
amusement.
Cow drag.
Cow drag.
Cow drag.
They did cow drag. All right, next question. Next job in the band other than yours, the biker. Turns out they have biker gangs in Australia as well, but there's an important difference down under. What is it? A, Australian outlaw bikers prefer to ride those big motorized tricycles so they don't tip. B, in Australia, they're called bikey gangs. Bikey gangs. Or C, they're all animal activists, part of their culture, so they never wear leather or eat meat.
They're B.
You're going with bikey gangs? You know that? You've been there? Well, you're right. It is, in fact, bikey gang.
Yeah, we were actually with a bike gang in Melbourne.
In Melbourne. Okay, so it's like, oh, no, Australian town's being terrorized by the bikey gangs. All right, this is great. You've got one right with one to go. Get this one right, you win. Lastly, of course, the cop. The first official city police force was, of course, the London Police, known as the Bobbies, formed in 1829. But things did not go well at the start. What happened to the very first Bobby hired? Who's badge number one. What happened to the guy who had badge number one? A, he came across a robbery in progress and immediately offered to help steal the loot. B, he gave up a foot chase because he said he had only agreed to work until dinner and he was hungry. Or C, he was fired for drunkenness 4 hours after being hired.
I would say he was fired for drunkenness.
That's your choice? Do you agree?
Yeah.
You guys are right. That's exactly what happened. The first Bobby hired was the first Bobby fired. The first police force did not attract the most upstanding people back then, and the first hire turned out to be a poor choice.
How can you take someone called a Bobby serious?
Exactly right.
Carl, how did I guess do?
They had two correct answers, so they win for Deborah Heiligman of New York.
Well done. Congratulations.
And Peter,
yes, sir.
Just so that my people don't come after you, it's Native Americans.
Oh, we wanted to know about that. No, seriously.
Yeah.
Because you were, I mean, when we talked about the village people growing up, there was like, oh, there's the construction workers
right,
up in the Indian.
Right, back then, but not
but
anymore.
I'm sorry, I should have asked.
No, don't be.
You've changed that. So now it's the Native American and the construction worker.
And we call each other, when we see each other face to face, we go, yo, skin.
Oh, really? All right. Well, anyway, whatever they're playing, Felipe Rose and David Hodo are two of the founding members of the immortal disco group, The Village People. Thank you so much for being with us today. Bye-bye, guys.
Thank you.
So this week, we're playing some of our favorite interviews with musicians in the hopes that one of their songs gets stuck in your head and you can't stop humming it.
In November of 2010, we made our debut on the Las Vegas Strip in the showroom at the Paris Hotel and Casino. And we were lucky enough to talk to Mr. Las Vegas himself, Wayne Newton.
Paula Poundstone, Adam Felber, and Faith Saley were on stage with us when I asked Wayne to define what it means to be a Las Vegas entertainer.
I think there's a style of performing that, by virtue of doing it every night, you either get it right or you have a heart attack or they shoot you. It's one or the other.
Right.
And so,
do you get to pick?
No.
At the end of every show.
No, you really don't get to pick.
Okay, you're known, your signature song, Danke Shane. How did that come to be your song, the Wayne Newton song?
The song was meant for Bobby Darin to record.
Yeah.
And Bobby had seen me on the Jackie Gleason show, which was my first national television show, in 1963. Came in and he's to the Copa Lounge where I was appearing, and he said, "Are you recording?" I said, "No, sir, I'm not." And he said, "You are now." And Bobby had received Danke Shane for him to follow Mac the Knife with.
Yeah.
And he said, "I want you to have this song." And he had an acetate record of it, a demonstration record, which you would play at 33 and a third, for those of you who remember those days. And Bobby said, "I'm going to show you how this will sound now when you record it," because the acetate had been sung by a German baritone singer. So he sped it up to 78 RPMs, and that's exactly how I sounded. No.
Okay, so tell us about your house, which has been in the news lately. You
has
have
it?
A beautiful, yeah, it has been. You've been you have a beautiful spread here in Vegas that's called Casa de Shenandoah. Do I get that right?
Yes, that's correct.
And tell us about what that place is like.
It's about 50 acres. We have Arabian horses. We have penguins. We have wallabies. We have all kinds of birds, swans.
I'm sorry, ducks. I stopped listening when you said penguins. You have penguins?
Oh, yes.
How do they like the climate?
They love it.
They do?
Really?
Yeah, they're from South Africa. Uh-huh. And most people don't realize, and I know this is probably not the forum, but of the 52 species of penguins in the world, there are only 3 species that are Arctic penguins.
It's a stereotype.
That's right. All the others come from South America, they come from the Galapagos Islands, they come from Chile. They cannot take cold weather.
Really?
This is so awkward, because whenever I have penguins over, I crank up the air conditioning.
Sorry, let's continue this. You said you have...
I feel like I was being so insulting.
But that's why they die on you.
So you have... you have
or close by,
I
anyway.
Thought it was my cooking, but yeah.
You have a menagerie. You have
yes, we do.
Arabian horses, you have penguins, you have wallabies.
We do.
What else?
African crown cranes.
Sure.
Horses, dogs, cats, chickens. We have chickens that have been thrown over the fence.
Yeah. And so you have this huge, and you have this place.
Your dogs must feel so inferior.
Well,
like they're the best pet in anybody else's house, and then this dog is looking at it going, "Oh, there's a crested thing over there," and I'm just.
I was thinking the chickens couldn't feel that good with the African crested cranes and the penguins. The chickens are just totally depressed, just pluck, 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 pluck.
Well, Wayne Newton, we are delighted to have you with us. We have asked you to play a game entitled...
Hey, wait a minute. You don't have a delicious fig filling.
Point is, you may be the most famous Newton, but you're not the only one. We're going to ask you three questions about other Newtons. If you get two right, you'll win our prize on our show. Carl's voice and their home answering machine. Carl, who is legendary entertainer Wayne Newton playing for?
Wayne Newton is playing for Rebecca Bendel of Las Vegas.
First question. There you go. Let's start right in with the Fig Newton. In the mid-70s, Nabisco tried to market the cookie how? A, creating a dance craze called the Big Fig Newton. B, starting a beauty contest, Ms. Fig USA. Or C, rolling out a new ad campaign with the slogan, why not just stuff it?
It was absolutely Big Fig.
The Big Fig Newton. Yes. You're right. You remember that? I remember that.
I remember that.
We have the...
It was a good guess, though, huh?
Yeah. Very good guess.
It was a very good guess.
It was a skilled guess.
All right, that was good. That was good, Wayne. But here we go. Your next Newton is the Apple Newton. It was one of Apple's only failures back in the 90s. It was a precursor to, like, the Palm Pilot, a personal digital assistant. People remember its handwriting recognition software, which never seemed to work. But where did this software come from, is the question. Where did the handwriting recognition software come from? A, it came to their senior programmer in a dream, but he was interrupted before he could write the whole thing down. B, it was delivered by an anonymous Russian programmer who came to an Apple exec's hotel at midnight, then disappeared forever. Or C, Steve Jobs was inspired to create it in order to decipher his own doctor's handwriting.
Definitely the first question.
The first one. It came to the senior program in a dream, but he was interrupted before he could write the whole thing down.
Yes.
You're very confident, but no, not in this case. You're not correct. It was, in fact, the anonymous Russian programmer.
Oh, wow.
According to the story, an Apple VP was in Moscow when he heard a frantic knocking on his door. He opened it to find a programmer who handed him a disk and then fled. That software became the basis for the Newton's handwriting recognition. True story.
Please, take this. It will bring your company to its knees. Bye.
Well, this is very exciting because you have one more question to go. If you get this right, you win it all. The last Newton, of course, Olivia Newton-John.
Whoa!
I'm guessing you might
know.
Wow,
I really thought we were going for Juice Newton on
no,
this
no, one. Well, we thought of her. But do you know Olivia Newton-John?
I'm very sure well, I yes,
you
I
might.
Do.
Well, then
is
you might know the answer.
Is she related to you before she married Mr. John?
No, she wasn't. No.
She's done a number of great duets in her career, including which of these just recently? A, she sang Summer Nights with one of the rescued Chilean miners. B, with Michelle Obama, she did Let's Get Physical in a PSA about exercise. Or C, she sang with Olivia Newton-san, the Japanese cross-dressing Olivia Newton-John impersonator.
Mrs. Obama.
You're going to go for Mrs. Obama?
I'm going to go for Mrs. Obama.
You think so?
I think so.
You sure about that?
I believe it's Mrs. Obama.
You really? You're going to go Mrs.
Yeah.
Obama?
Yeah.
Oh.
I don't know how to tell you this. It was A. It was A. It was is with the Chilean miner. She just sang Summer Nights. This is the Chilean
she
miner.
Didn't.
That's
Mr.
fantastic.
Pena. He's the guy who sang on Letterman.
Was this before or after?
No, this was just after.
Oh, I see.
She didn't go down in the mine. That would have been amazing if, like, they're down there and the rescue capsule appears and opens up and it's like, it's Olivia Newton-John. They sent her down here. That would have been great. But no, he's a big singer, and she was there doing a concert, and he came up, and they did Summer Nights together. It was apparently great.
That's odd, because all he met all summer were other miners.
Yeah, that's true. That's a good point. So, Carl, how did Wayne Newton end up doing in our quiz?
He needed at least two correct answers to win for Rebecca Bendel, but he had just one correct answer.
That's... the first time you have not succeeded in a Las Vegas stage.
Well, it's probably the first time that's been broadcast nationally.
Yeah, sure. Fair enough. Ladies and gentlemen, Wayne Newton is Mr. Las Vegas. Wayne Newton, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Betty LeVette had been singing rhythm and blues for years when she came out on stage at the Kennedy Center on live TV and blew the roof off with her version of The Who's Love Rain Over Me.
Once she paid for the new roof, she put out an entire album of covers of British invasion songs and then joined us on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me in May of 2010 with panelists Mo Rocca, Charlie Pierce, and Roxanne Roberts.
I made the mistake of calling Ms. LeVette a blues singer, and she set me straight.
Well, I'm not a blues singer. I'm a rhythm and blues singer,
okay.
And there is a distinction. But I pretty much sing just the way I talk. It really wasn't a great leap. They just added some music to what I was already saying.
Okay, can I ask, do blues singers have no rhythm?
Because they're not singing rhythm.
You know,
and blues.
That is quite often so. I really believe that I am a better dancer than B.B. King.
There you are. Hey, let's talk a little bit about your singing, which is extraordinary. You're known, among many other things, for your soulful moaning. So actually, we have a sample. This is Betty Levette on a recent record. Some pretty good moaning. And I mean, is that something you had to learn, or does that come natural to you?
I think the entire thing comes natural to me. I don't know that I'm really, but I have not considered it just the moaning part.
Really? you never thought of that specifically?
No, I never thought about that.
I need to do my scales before I sing, and I need to moan a bit to warm up the moaning. No.
But moaning really is very good vocal exercising, and I do have to kind of get some kind of buoyancy to my voice before I go on and just... is very good for warming up the vocal cords.
It sounds like you ate something really delicious. Like I don't know if you eat pudding, but if you have pudding and it's really good, will you just start moaning?
See, I moan, it sounds like I'm about to vomit. That's why I'm not a soul singer.
Do you think it's
Plus, I'm always like, oh.
Well, wait. Do you think it's really moaning? I think it's kind of just kind of like a mmm. I mean, I wouldn't call that a moan
it's per se. It's like a mmm.
Sort of like a mmm.
What do you call it?
It's called a warming up.
It's the moaning. This is the first time I've actually ever discussed it.
I understand. Well, that's...
Peter, your moaning sounds like heartburn.
I know. One last question. We ask this, Betty, of all the musicians on our show, so we'll ask you, what would you say is the sexiest musical instrument?
Probably the saxophone, because they ran the Adolph Sax out of town because women were flocking to see him purse his lips to embrace the saxophone.
So. No, what is this now? This, you're talking about Adolph Sax was run out of town because he was seen to be...
When he would appear for his concerts, they didn't want young women to go, and they were falling in love with him everywhere.
He was too lurid?
Gosh, I used to be madly in love with Grover Washington when we were working there in the same band, and I just think he was one of the sexiest saxophone players I ever knew.
Wow, that's very convincing.
You know what, Betty? I got to say, you had a lot of fun, didn't you?
You certainly did.
Oh, absolutely. The only thing the show business owes me at this point is money. I am absolutely... That's the only thing it owes me.
Other than that, you got paid.
Yes, absolutely. I've done things that people have dreamed of with people that they dreamed about.
Wait a minute, I'm sorry, hold on.
I love that.
Hold on, stop. You said, I've done things that people have dreamed of with people that they have dreamed about.
Mm-hmm.
Jeez.
Do you want to elaborate on that in any way?
No, I don't.
All right.
That calls for a moan.
It really does. Well, we are delighted to have you, Betty. We've asked you here this time to play a game we're calling...
Gosh, I don't remember any of the Disney princesses doing that.
You may have heard that Sarah Ferguson, the Duchess of York, was caught recently asking for a massive bribe to introduce an undercover journalist to her former husband, Prince Andrew. Turns out that is not the only colorful thing that Sarah Ferguson has done in her long public career, since you are a queen of rhythm and blues, we figured we'd ask you about the Duchess of Ruckus.
Okie dokie.
Get two right, you'll win our prize. One of our listeners calls voice on their home answering machine. Carl, who is Betty Levette playing for?
Betty is playing for Rachel Kastelic of Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Ready to go?
Yes, I am.
Here we go. Here's your first question. Sarah was known for her non-princessy ways. On one of her first visits with the queen, her future mother-in-law, she committed a faux pas when she did what? A,
She referred to the British monarch as Liz. B, she accidentally kicked one of the Queen's corgi dogs. Or C, she reached over during dinner and stole one of Prince Philip's potatoes with her fork.
No, I think it was the fork thing.
You think it was the fork thing?
I think she wanted to call her Liz, but I think it was the fork thing.
You think it was the fork thing. That's a given her future career, that's a reasonable guess, but I'm afraid. In this case, what happened was she accidentally kicked one of the corgis.
Oh, okay.
She says, quote, "You would have thought the little yapper was bound for the royal kennel in the sky."
Oh, I'm loving it.
That's okay. You still got two more chances here. You get these ones right, you'll still win. Now, for a long time, Sarah was very close with Princess Diana, who was another outsider who had married at the royal household. Together, their silly pranks irritated the press and other royals, most notably when they were photographed on one occasion doing what? A, poking people's behinds with their umbrellas at Ascot, the races. B, putting shaving cream onto the hand of a sleeping Prince Edward and then tickling his nose. Or C, making bunny ears behind visiting dignitaries at an official state function.
God, I just hate to see either one of them doing any of those things. Bunny ears.
Bunny ears, you like walked up behind him, made the bunny ears? our panelists are moaning in disapproval of that choice.
Oh, you sound like the pips.
And they're doing this choreographed dance as they do it. It's very exciting to watch.
Okay, you know what? I can't imagine these women poking people with the thing, but I'll go with that because it's so absolutely absurd.
It's true, though. You got it. Well done. Yeah, the Ascot, as you may know, is one of the most fancy events of the aristocratic social season, and they were there poking people's bottoms with their umbrella. Caused quite the scandal. All right.
Hitting them right in the Ascot.
Exactly. Last question. If you get this, you win it all. Fergie and Di did, in fact, have a falling out before Di's death. What did Sarah do to so enrage Princess Diana? A, Fergie said that she got a bad case of warts from borrowing Diana's shoes. B, Fergie had shown up at Wimbledon wearing exactly the same hat, which Diana had first. Or C, Fergie said, quote, "Thank God Diana's sons got her looks, but their grandmother's brains."
Ooh.
Ooh.
Ooh, that's just terrible. Okay, I'll just go with the shoes.
You're right. That's what happened. She says, Fergie published an autobiography in which she told the story of how she got these warts from Diana's shoes. Diana was so upset that she cut her off entirely socially. Carl, how did Betty LeVette do in our show?
Well, Betty had two correct answers, Peter, and that's enough to win for Rachel.
Well done. Congratulations, Betty.
I feel brilliant.
You are brilliant, and you're beautiful, and you're great, and we love having you. Betty LeVette is a soul, blues, rock, and funk legend. Her new album is called Interpretations, the British Songbook. It is out now. Go get it. Betty LeVette, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, baby, for having me.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
For years, people have asked me if I get nervous during interviews, and I've always said no. I mean, it's not like I'm talking to somebody I've admired my whole life, like Elvis Costello. So when Elvis Costello actually came on the show in November of 2010, Carl had to keep me from shrieking like a teenage girl.
Yes, but there's some things even I can't do. Elvis joined us along with panelists Roxanne Roberts, Mo Rocca, and Charlie Pierce.
I started by asking Mr. Costello, as I call him, for tips on interviewing musicians because he's been interviewing them himself on his talk show, Spectacle.
I just tried to remember the very first time I was ever interviewed, and I was interviewed by a man who had apparently been sent by Central Casting from an old English movie wearing a stained Macintosh and a long plume of ash on a cigarette, who wanted to ask me, "Tell us about the girls, then." And I just assuming that there must be stories about the girls if I was in the business I was in.
But there are some stories about girls, aren't there?
Well, we can't get into them now because it's a family show.
Well, yeah. It's a shame because I had just written down my first question, which was, tell us about the girls, eh? You were, back when you started, you've heard this before, you know this, you had a reputation of being an angry young man as a performer.
No, I'm an angry old man.
Really? Because, have you not mellowed? It seems like you've mellowed a bit to me. Am I wrong?
No, I think that probably when I started out, a lot of that which was taken for anger was probably impatience and shyness, strangely enough. It seems like a crazy thing to say. Anger covers a lot of... it can be a useful thing if it's righteous indignation. If you're just mildly vexed, if you're going around the whole time and you're like being mildly vexed, I don't think that would be very... That wouldn't be much of an act.
That'd be great to be the vexed middle-aged man of British pop.
Yeah, I used to be an angry young man. Now I'm just a mildly vexed
cat. Can I ask a question? If you hadn't gone into music, what would you have been?
The first job I went for when I left school was as an Admiralty chart corrector. An Admiralty chart corrector. Hold on a second. My young son's just wandered in looking for his mother. Hey, it's like I Love Lucy, man.
It's very much like that, actually. Your wife, of course, is the extraordinarily talented musician Diana Krall. So, you guys, British rocker, Canadian jazz pianist, it's like a sitcom. You realize this, don't you?
Well, exactly. Believe me, it's much more like that than you imagine.
The chart corrector.
The chart. So you're an Admiralty chart corrector.
Yeah, an Admiralty chart corrector. That's what I went for. And then they discovered that because of my unfortunate left-handedness, copying the tracings of the latest sandbanks and wrecks onto the charts that came in from the ships that came ashore in Liverpool, probably have increased the amount of naval disasters.
Really?
Yeah. So I then got a job in a bank, and I was given the task of being the lookout during the delivery of the bullion. I was given a whistle.
A whistle?
It was a very nice whistle, and they said, in the case of a robbery, blow this. And this is perfectly true. And I thought about it for a moment. I thought, in the case of a robbery, who do you think you would shoot first? Probably the guy with the whistle. And so I went into rock and roll.
I think it's a safer alternative and better for the finance system. Elvis Costello, we've asked you here to play a game we're calling...
Elvis. Haven't I heard that name before?
Since you probably get compared to the other Elvis all the time, we're going to ask you three questions about him right now. That's right, three questions about figure skater Elvis Stoiko. Bet you saw that coming. Get two right, you'll win our prize. Carl's voice on their home answering machine. Carl, who is Elvis Costello playing for?
He is playing for Jan Schumann of Charleston, South Carolina.
You ready to do this?
Absolutely. I mean, I hope you realize that I grew up within spitting distance of the Richmond ice rink, so that specialist subject.
You really? So you know all about this. Here we go. Well, as you know then, Elvis Stoiko is the greatest living Canadian male figure skater, if you don't count Brian Orser or maybe Kurt Browning, too. It's a debate. Since retiring from competitive skating, Elvis has devoted himself to a number of pursuits, including which of these? A, making sure people refer correctly to the Canada Goose, not call it a Canadian Goose. B, making figure skating more butch. Or C, creating his signature line of tailored jumpsuits.
Oh, I think it's got to be the first.
You think making sure people do not call it Canadian Goose, that's incorrect. It's Canada Goose, damn it. Get it right.
Yes.
That would be a great thing for him to be doing, because it's a problem. But in fact, what he's been doing is he's been trying to make figure skating more butch. He has said that figure skating needs to attract more men to the sport, and to do that, it has to be more masculine and strong. That is his crusade.
Well, that's why they're enlisting me into the Olympic team next time out.
Absolutely. Next question, you still have two more chances. When it comes to making things more manly, Elvis is not limiting himself to skating. He's also planning to take over which of these fields and give it that Elvis touch? A, cell phone gaming. B, soft rock. Or C, cheese making?
I thought you said he was trying to make figure skating more manly.
He is, but he's doing something else.
None of those pursuits seem to be consistent with that objective. I mean, I imagine that there's an element to this sport that involves après-ski entertainments and nutrition.
True.
Which could mean fondue, so I've got to go for the cheese.
So, if I'm not mistaken, you just made a logical bridge from figure skating to cheese. You.
I think after a hard day on the ice,
really?
It's cheese making.
And my sort of hemming and hawing, the knowledge that I'm a fan and want the best for you, doesn't indicate to you that maybe that's not the best choice.
I sense that I'm being guided by a higher force.
Well, it's my chance to
could
collaborate.
Could it be soft rock?
It is! Elvis Stoiko released his debut album, 100 Lifetimes, which he described as hot adult contemporary. That's, quote, more edgy. Tracks include Fire Ice, Daddy Will Go First, and Drop the Gloves.
I think you find that actually when you buy that record, it says that the charge will not appear on your credit card statement.
Yes.
It's a free download.
Yes, it will not appear. All right, here we go. Last question. If you get this one right, you win it all. Last question. Elvis Stoiko, like a lot of athletes, has started an acting career. Which of these was one of his film roles? A, the skating stand-in for Robin Williams in Death to Smoochie. B, the romantic lead in a Canadian film, Winnipeg Nights. Or C, masked karate fighter in Lara Croft Tomb Raider 2.
I think it's got to be the Death to Smoochie.
Yes, indeed. Well done, sir. Robin Williams apparently cannot skate well enough himself. They had to bring in a professional. Carl, how did Elvis Costello do in our quiz?
He had two correct answers, Peter, and that's enough to win for Jan Schumann.
There you are, sir. Well done. Elvis Costello's new album is National Ransom. I'm a huge fan. If you're not, there's something wrong with you. Elvis, thank you so much for joining us on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. What a pleasure to talk to you at last. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Don't start the talking. Could talk all night. My mind was sleepwalking while I'm putting the world to right. Call careers information. Have you got yourself an occupation?
All of us are here to stay. All of us are on their way.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the National Association of Realtors, providing resources for homeownership at houselogic.com. The Melville Charitable Trust, supporting solutions to prevent and end homelessness on the web at melvilletrust.org. And Esurance, where customer support is available 24/7, 365. Esurance Car Insurance. People when you want them, technology when you don't. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, executive producer. Philip Gotica writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Our intern is Amy Solomon. Our web guru, Beth Novi. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Ian Chillog, Eva Walchover, and Emily Ecton. Technical direction is from Robert Newhouse and Lorna White. The senior producer of Wait, Wait is Mike Danforth. Thanks to Carl Castle. Thanks to all of our panelists. And thank you all for listening. I'm Peter Sagal, and we will see you next week in San Francisco, California. This is NPR.